Right, now it's a show. We've got Val Chapman and Alfie in from the Rochdale Creative Writing Group. Oh, hang on a second. Sorry, let me just turn the Rolling Stones off. There we go, that's better. Hi guys, how are you?
Hi.
Not too bad. Not too bad.
Good. Just let me turn you up a little bit. Val, try that again.
Yeah, we're fine, thank you.
There we go, I can hear you now, that's better. Welcome back to the show.
Thank you. Good to be here.
I haven't seen you two for 2 years.
No,
can you believe it?
Exactly. I know.
Frightening, isn't
it? Long time.
How have you been? Have you been all right?
Yeah. We've been fine. Thank you.
Good.
Yeah. Stay safe.
Yeah, we're okay.
Yeah. All you and yours have all stayed safe. Yes. Everybody at the Creative Writing Group is okay.
Yes, I think so. Yeah, I think one or two had COVID, didn't they? But we've not heard anything, untoward about that. So.
Right, what I should do, I suppose, is for those out there who haven't heard of the Rochdale Creative Writing Group before, they are, hang on a second, I've got your blurb here. It's a fully...
Touchstones.
Yeah. Touchstones Creative Writing Group is an organisation which is open to writers of all abilities, which includes several published or broadcast authors. They meet monthly at Touchstones Arts and Heritage Centre. They do facilitated workshops. It boasts an ever-increasing membership, and they have been responsible for all sorts of things in the cultural fabric of Rochdale. There has been the Lexicon Festival, there has been the Sports Meet Stand Showcase, there's been the Hanging by a Thread project that you've done with Skylight Circus. When you start reeling all of this stuff off, it's fantastic what you've been doing, isn't it?
Yeah, it's good. It's really good to get people together as well. That's why we formed the Pulling Threads group, which is the performance side of the writing group. So it's TCWG, Pulling Threads. Yeah, so that's part of it.
And you're here today. It's quite a special day, actually. You're here today because you have quite a history of doing work related to the First World War, don't you?
Yes, we do. Yes.
So I know you've done various festival things and you've done kind of public readings and things like that. The kind of stuff that you're doing is usually in a live situation, and you've got the pair of you are sitting there with a whole portfolio of work spread in front of you. So who's going to start today?
Well, I'm going to start today.
Okay.
But what we've tried to do, we've got a list of poems.
Sorry about that, we were just having a couple of production issues. Welcome back to Community Corner. You're listening to Tim Moore, this is Roche Valley Radio. Right, let's have our first piece of poetry. Alfie, is it you who's going to start?
Yes, I am.
Okay, what's the title of it?
This is Goodbye to Mother.
Do you want to give us a bit of background? What's the story about?
It's something that just came to my mind, of how everybody going to war in 1914, who... A lot of people never been up the villages, and so this was a great adventure for going to war. They didn't know what they were going to, but obviously when they got there, they found out what they were going to. Prior to that, going away, they said, well, yes, let's go. They get all these new mates and old mates with them and all this kind of stuff. So to them, it was great to get away, but the big but was to come. So this one was Goodbye to Mother.
Okay, away you go.
I climb into the family horse-drawn carriage. Mother and father are already on the board, a brave face showing. My two elder sisters, with reins at the ready, call walk on to the farm shire horse. We move down the lane leading from the farmhouse. It's early morning and a hazy cold mist hangs across the fields. Mother is still trying not to look me in the eye. And father, with his stern face and that nervous cough, twiddles his moustache in an uneasy silence. We reach the end of the lane and turn towards the railway station. With a real frost chill, the white frost on the ground, my sisters are now bringing whiskey to a gentle trot. He is a Clydesdale Shire, a strong but gentle giant. The year's 1914, November, in fact. I have joined up and I'm on my way with a heavy heart to the station at Ribbleton, from where the train will take me into Preston to join the Loyal North Lancashire Regiment. We arrive at the station and all right, my sisters saying their goodbyes with tears in their eyes. There are teardrops on the lapel of my greatcoat. they will stay and hold whiskey. With rucksack on my shoulder, I move towards the entrance. Mother is linking my arm and holding on tight. We see the train in full steam standing at the platform. Army sergeants are bellowing out their orders to the men. Captains and young lieutenants doing their best to look important. Well, Mother, it's time to go now, I say. I must board for my great adventure. Mother is holding on to my hand, her shaking with trepidation, and I hear her silenced question, will I come back? We look into each other's eyes, Mother's red and seemingly sore, tears running down her cheek, not wanting to let go. I free my hand to shake my dad's hand. My father fought in the Boer War, so he well knows my feelings, but with that brave face, that nervous cough, and his moustache twitching, he winks and says, good luck, old boy. I have to force my way out of Mother's arms after the rail guard blows his whistle to board. There's a great scudding, crying, moaning goodbyes, ringing out over the sound of the steam engine. Very slowly, it starts to move out of the station and onto Preston. There's much excitement, and all the men start singing, it's a long way to Tipperary, it's a long way to go. Mother is still waving her silk lace-edged handkerchief, but now, out of view, we settle down to an eerie silence. Then there's lots of shouting and singing again. A great adventure awaits.
That was brilliant. I love that line you said about his dad shaking his hand and a good luck, old boy. Yeah. That speaks to a very sort of British stiff upper lip.
That's right. That's correct. Yeah.
All right, we'll break for some music and then we'll come back and we'll hear one from Val.
Call Roche Valley Radio now. 0161 764 9200.
Welcome back to Roche Valley Radio. You're listening to Community Corner on a Saturday afternoon. My name's Tim Moore. I will be here. We're here for the next half an hour, and we're here with the Touchstones Creative Writing Group. I'm joined by Val and Alfie. I have to say, it is an absolute pleasure because they are long-standing supporters of the show and have been on, along with other members of the Creative Writing Group, many times. Today they are reading a selection of poems inspired by the First World War, it being Remembrance Sunday tomorrow. There's a great history of poetry coming out of World War One, isn't there? The famous war poets, Wilfred Owen, Sassoon, and people like that. Do you think? I mean, there may have been poetry that came out of the Boer War and things like that, but there seems to be something about the First World War poetry that really does get to the heart of people who hear it. Why do you think that is? Do you think it's the first-hand nature of it? Do you think what do you think?
Yeah, I think a lot of, because of so many men died, and we're not talking about a few hundred thousand, we're talking about millions of men dying across the whole of the 4 years of the war, and so many more injured. I think it just has that thing about it that it was a real world war. We'd never had a world war before. I think that people remember it more so than the Second World War.
We must always remember it, mustn't we?
Well, yeah, actually, that's a really good point. It is more so than the Second World War.
Yeah, and that was just as bad.
Absolutely, yeah. But do you think it's that thing about, you know, this was the first time that there was sort of reporting from the front? You know, the first time there was real sort of life, first-hand experiences?
Oh, I think so, yeah. And there were so many mistakes made as well. So many men lost and shouldn't have been lost with these major generals sat 8 miles behind the lines.
Well, that's what's the line? Is it lions led by donkeys, isn't it?
That's right.
Is the line,
that was correct, so yeah. So that was another issue, I think. There's so many things that makes it stand out. I mean, Val's going to do a one in a moment of the horses. There was millions of horses died.
Yeah, so go on, Val. Tell us, what's the name of this poem that you're going to do?
This is called A Forgotten Tragedy.
Okay, so this is about the war horses and the animals that were involved in the war. So how did you
people don't generally think of, you know.
No, they don't. You're absolutely right. There's a special. Is it a purple one that you can wear now to remember the animals?
Yes.
But that's only come in the last couple of years, hasn't it?
Yes, it has.
So what made you write this then, Val?
I'm not sure. I was just reading, researching online, and I was shocked at how many horses in particular, but animals generally, died along with the soldiers, you know? And they didn't get looked after either. The soldiers didn't really look after them properly.
No, and they got taken from farms, they got taken from, you know, they got taken from every walk of life, didn't they?
Yeah, yeah.
Go on then, Val, after you.
Okay. A forgotten tragedy. As well as all the men who fought, animals also played their part. 8 million horses, mules and donkeys died, and only 62,000 returned. One animal for every 4 men. So let the four-legged warrior's sacrifice be known, the significance of horses in the bloodiest warfare in history. It's the forgotten tragedy of the Great War. No horse of less than 15 hands would carry crucial supplies and ration carts, ambulances and ammunitions, the wounded on stretchers placed on carriages through constantly shelled and muddy conditions where four-wheeled vehicles failed. A soldier holds the reins of his trusted steed. They share a bond like no other. Pitched into the line of fire, conditions dire. They were caught up in mustard gas attacks, though often fitted with equine gas masks. But soldiers left their horses unchecked, and the worst was not artillery or gunfire threat, but infection, disease and malnutrition, colic from misfeeding, saddle sores, thrush, rain scald, laminitis, the list is endless. Soldiers would charge their horses into battle, often resulting in both their deaths. They endured unimaginable suffering of things most hateful to them, violent noise and the bright lights of bursting shells on those most sensitive eyes, and the terrifying smell of blood. Despite their undeniable strength, the horses were no less vulnerable to the dangers of the battlefield, and in those battlefields, the Somme being only one, they were sometimes left tangled in barbed wire in front of the trenches to die alone in no man's land, or wandering aimlessly through the sodden landscape, such a senseless loss of life. And for the few thousand who didn't lose their lives, most were slaughtered, fed to soldiers, and the luckiest resumed their former lives traumatised. Around 8 million horses, mules and donkeys died. They didn't take sides.
It's funny, you see footage nowadays, don't you? The old black and white sort of cinereal stuff of, you know, there's the horses trudging through 4 foot deep mud.
Oh, yeah.
And pulling cannons, which must weigh 5 or 6 times more than they do.
Oh, yeah.
And it was just, it was the last conflict where horses were, you know, majorly used. Obviously, tanks came in after that and things like that. But it's for so long, their sort of contribution. And like you said, not just horses, but, you know, dogs, carrier pigeons, all sorts of animals were used. So we're having an on-air production meeting during the course of those years as well. That's a lovely poem. Thank you very much, Val.
Thank you.
So, Alfie, it's your turn next.
Right.
Tell us about this. What are you reading
this
now?
This is called Jack Cornball.
Okay.
And Jack was a 16-year-old lad in the First World War who joined the Royal Navy and fought at the Battle of Jutland on HMS Chester.
Okay.
And he finished up winning a VC posthumously, so, and I thought he needed a mention.
So how did you hear about this story?
I think it was on television. There was something about on a documentary, because I like watching documentaries.
Okay.
And I think it came up on a documentary, and I thought, wow, what an interesting thing. And nobody knows of him. He's forgotten, basically. He's disappeared into the background, you know, so. And I thought, well, I researched it, and this is what I put together for him.
Away you go.
So it's called Jack Cornball. Jack, John Travers Jack, Cornball to his mates, was born in January 1900 in Leighton, London. Jack dreamt of going to sea after his school days. And when the Great War broke out, Jack jumped at the chance to join the Royal Navy. He became Boy First Class Cornwall on HMS Chester. Assigned to the North Sea Squadron, Admiral Beatty in command. The German High Seas Fleet was engaged on the 31st of May 1916 and the Battle of Jutland began and became part of Royal Navy folklore as Trafalgar did. Jack became part of a 10-man battery battery gun crew. The enemy engaged, shells were fired for 20 miles or more. Jack's gun was hit and put out of action, with 8 men dead. He had shrapnel embedded in his face, chest and arms. His blood ran down into the already blood-stained deck. Jack was mortally wounded, but stayed at his post, waiting orders. 2 days after his action, Boy First Class John Travis Cuomo died in a Grimsby hospital. He was awarded a VC posthumously. Jack was buried in what was no better than a pauper's grave in Grimsby, but was later reburied with full military honours. His body now lies in Manor Park Cemetery in London. In an official dispatch, Admiral Beatty wrote, "Boy, First Class John Travis Cuomo of HMS Chester was mortally wounded early in the action. He nevertheless remained standing alone at his most exposed post and quietly awaiting orders. Till the end of the action, with the gun crew dead and wounded all around him, his age was under 16 and a half years old. I regret that he had since died, but I recommend his case for special recommendation in justice to his memory and as an acknowledgement of his high example set by him."
And there must be thousands of stories just like that, mustn't there?
Yes. Oh,
you know,
yes.
That families will tell, and that, you know, people who've been passed down, who've, like you said, passing out of memory. I think it was the RAF who did a big campaign a couple of years ago about trying to get all these people who'd sort of been forgotten about, you know, re-remembered. That was lovely. Thank you very much, Alfie. Yeah. Right, we'll break for some music, and we will hear some more poetry when we come back. This is Robert Miles and Children.
Music for Bury and Rochdale.
I love it.
This is Roche Valley Radio.
Welcome back to Community Corner. My name's Tim Moore. We're here with Val and Alfie from the Touchstones Creative Writing Group. It's great to have them back in the studio. They're performing a selection of their World War One poetry for today, it being Remembrance Day. Tomorrow. I think who's doing the next one?
Me.
You're doing the next one. So this is about a war poet who isn't necessarily one of the more well-known ones. Would that be fair enough?
Probably not, no.
Okay.
But, yeah. A postcard from John McCrae. In Flanders Fields, in August 1914, Britain declared war on Germany. As part of the British Empire, Canada and its citizens responded quickly from all across the land. John McCrae was one of them, appointed brigade surgeon with the rank of major and second in command. He wrote to his friend, "It's a terrible state of affairs. I'm going because I feel that every bachelor who has experience of war ought to go, but I'm really rather afraid. Yet I'm more afraid to stay at home with my conscience." John took with him his horse named Bonfire. Another companion and a casualty of war was a dog named Bono, who adopted John as his special friend. John was an optimistic man with an infectious smile. From the trenches, he wrote to his mother, "We have been in the most bitter of fights. None of us have removed even our boots for 17 days and 17 nights, and in all that time, the gun and rifle fire never ceased." John treated hundreds of wounded every day, surrounded by the dead, the dying, the maimed, with the terrible anxiety that at any time the line might give way. On the 3rd of May, during the Second Battle of Ypres, McCrae was at the front line when one of his closest friends was killed. Mourning and angered, the very next day he penned his most famous and inspirational poem in memory of Alexis Helmer in Flanders Fields. His friend was buried in a makeshift grave with a simple wooden cross, where poppies already bloomed between the graves. Unable to help his friend or any others who had died, John gave them a voice through his poem, the second to last poem he was ever to write. John McCrae was a patriot, devoting his life to his country, prepared even to die to defend it. But deeply affected by the fighting and losses in France, he became bitter and disillusioned. He felt he should have made even greater sacrifices and insisted on living in a tent like his comrades at the front rather than in the officers' huts. John was never again that optimistic man with the infectious smile. To write letters and poetry was John's temporary escape, and he would take long rides on Bonfire through the Belgian countryside and meditate. Suffering from asthma and bouts of bronchitis, not helped by living in a tent, John had to be moved into No. 14 British General Hospital for officers, where he continued to relent to his illness. The day he fell ill with pneumonia, John learned of his appointment of consulting physician to the 1st British Army, the first Canadian ever to be so honoured, and of the success of his still famous poem. After an illness of only 5 days, on the 28th of January 1918, John died of pneumonia and meningitis. He was buried with full military honours in Wimereux Cemetery, not far from the fields of Flanders. Bonfire led the procession, MacRae's riding boots reversed in the stirrups. In Flanders Fields was translated into many languages, and in part because of its popularity at the time, the poppy was adopted as the flower of remembrance for the war dead of Britain, France, the US, Canada, and other Commonwealth countries. The symbolic poppy and John MacRae's poems are still linked, and the voices of those dead soldiers continue to be heard each Remembrance Day.
What do you think he would have thought if he was still around today? What do you think he would have thought about how that poem is now part of the national consciousness? It's one of those stanzas now, isn't it, that everybody knows?
It is, in Flanders Fields, yes.
And the sad thing is he died, and like Wilfred Owen, died a week before the end of the war.
Yeah.
You know, another great poet. So it's very sad these guys who wrote so much poetry and were inspired by being at the front line and whatever. So it was very sad. But yeah, I mean, you're quite right. It's part of the weekend of...
It is.
Of the commemoration. So yeah.
It will be read out in countless ceremonies, you know, everywhere from the Orkney Islands all the way down to the Isle of Wight, won't it?
Yeah. I know Val gets, she fills up when she reads it.
Oh, absolutely. I think that's a very, very common thing. It's hair up the back of your neck sort of thing, isn't it?
Yeah.
It really is. It really is.
Yeah, brings it home to you, doesn't it?
Go on then, Alfie, what's your next one?
Okay. This is The Warrior Unknown. And again, people know of the Warrior Unknown or the Unknown Soldier in Westmorland Abbey, but vast majority of people don't know how he got selected, how he got there, what his journey was, his last journey. And I thought, I'll have a look at that. So this is what I came up with. So it's the Warrior Unknown. The 11th of November, 1920, a cenotaph, an empty tomb, Portland Stone, Whitehall commemorates the Great War dead. Hamlets, villages, towns and cities wish to remember their own dead. So the walk of silence of that unknown soldier begins. A padre of the Great War sides a grave by a French battlefield that simply states in pencil on a wooden cross, an unknown British soldier. So the call went out from on high, find and exhume with dignity four soldiers from the four now silent battlefields. No identifying marks, no regimental insignia, no identifying uniforms, no means of identification. Just a soldier is the order. A warrior dressed in his plain wooden coffin has the honour guard of French troops to Boulogne, where the 2-inch thick English oak coffin becomes his overcoat. The plain coffin, a white coat inside the oak, secured with special iron bands, his coffin decorated by the Crusader sword, heralded by the inscription, a British warrior who fell in the Great War of 1914-1918. Carried with the Padre flag draped, bestowed with full military honours, our warrior is piped aboard HMS Verdun with an admiral's call. Moving from trench to tomb, taken ashore to rest at Victoria Station. The morning of the 11th of November 1920, our warrior's coffin placed on a gun carriage is pulled by six black horses. Soldiers line the streets, rifles upside down, resting on their boots. Countless people stand silent this grey November morning. King George rests his thanks on the coffin, wreath bay and roses at the newly built cenotaph, then falls in behind the warrior. Military bands, solemn music marches, the troops, tens of thousands, line the route in solemn, silent thought. Westminster Abbey, pallbearers, decorated with their VCs, carry out the warrior and his final resting place. Interred with dignity among kings and queens, the king's hand drops French soil on the coffin. Silk funeral pall with the Padre's flag laid over. Thousands file past. More French soil builds the grave. A black marble stone atop the tomb. Now a resting place for royal wedding bouquets.
You see, I've heard you read that before, and I think that's absolutely amazing at the picture that it paints as it comes in. I think I really do. I think that's great. Right, I know that you want to finish with another short one.
Yes,
I just want to drop in a little bit about the creative writing group. Is it still? I think it was the first Tuesday of every month. Is that right?
First Thursday
of every month. And you've got on the 6th of January, you've got Seamus Kelly. On the 3rd of February, you've got Attar Hadar. And on the 3rd of March, you've got Jenny Bailey running the workshop sessions for you. Mm. If you're listening and if you've never been down, it's a lovely, warm, convivial, welcoming atmosphere. You don't have to have written, you don't have to have published, you don't nothing like that. Even if you've just got this bug that you think, do you know what, that's not bad, but I need somebody else to hear it, then do go down. I honestly can't. As a group of people, they are incredibly warm and incredibly welcoming. I can't recommend it highly enough. So we're going to finish Community Corner now. This will be the last time you hear me. Thank you very much for tuning in this week. If you've missed any of the show, then you can get Tina Harrison on a podcast, which we'll put together. Zoe Hodges will put it on a podcast. And we will also be putting the last 45 minutes with the Touchstones Creative Writing Group with Val and Alfie. We'll put this out as a podcast as well, so you can hear this. You're going to finish off with a short poem, Alfie. Is that right? This is called The Silence?
Silence, yes.
Okay.
It's about the cenotaph at Rochdale.
Right. Okay. So thank you very much for listening, folks. And we will see you next week.
Silence. I lie on top of the cenotaph within my silence, an effigy of a recumbent soldier, carved from stone and cold, commemorating the Great War as it was known, remembered once a year on the 11th of November with great reverence and respect. A cenotaph of Cornish granite, surrounded by four painted stone flags, a listed structure within 10 metres tall. Miners, policemen, farmers exempt. White feathers given out to men in error. Iceland delivered with unwanted news. Wives, fiancés, girlfriends are left behind. Glorious dead? Nothing glorious about being dead. Nothing glorious about dying. For a cause you don't understand. Telling the families of the dead that they died gloriously. I lie on top of the cenotaph within my silence.